Hello, everybody. Josh Brown here, back for another great episode on Franchise Euphoria. Well, today's episode is brought to you by IndieFranchiseLaw.com, a leading resource in the franchise space to help you if you're considering buying a franchise, turning your business into a franchise, or growing your business through a licensing or franchise structure. So go on, check it out, IndieFranchiseLaw.com. I think you'll find a lot of valuable and free information as you continue to kind of weigh franchising and licensing and the growth of your business. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's episode. On today's episode of Franchise Euphoria, I've got Terry Ogburn, who is the renowned owner and lead business coach of Ogburn's Business Solutions. His proprietary coaching system and personal devotion to the development of others has contributed to the success of many small and large business ventures. Terry began his business career in 1979 when he invested his last $118.42 to start an air conditioning service business. 10 years later, he developed his own business success program based on his experience and the teachings of his favorite business books. Terry successfully sold his air conditioning service business and was later asked to join Uniglobe Active Travel as a director of operations to boost individual store performance. In 1994, he became a founding team member of EXA Travel International and took on the role of director of training and development. And within 2 years, the company grew to 11 regional offices with over 2,000 franchisees and went public in late 1996. Following the success of EXA, Terry embarked on a series of successful relationships involving turning around performance with corporations such as Radio Shack, Metro Call Paging, AT&T Wireless, and Century 21 Real Estate. In December 2005, Terry chose to return to his true passion, helping independent entrepreneurs and small business owners plan, launch, and develop their businesses. This interview with Terry was really a lot of fun, and he brings a whole host of experience in working with franchises and helping the franchisors grow and also helping the franchisees succeed. So I think you'll get a real kick and learn a lot of great and valuable information from this interview with Terry Ogburn. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this interview with Terry. Hello, Terry. Welcome to Franchise Euphoria. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Josh, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you come on. We're going to talk about a bunch of different stuff today. You've got such a awesome background in franchising and a whole bunch of other ventures. And I think presently you've got a business called Ogburn's Business Solutions, where you work specifically with CEOs and entrepreneurs. But before we talk about that, I know it's kind of going to be hard to do this, to summarize this, but it'll take a minute or two and tell us a little bit about your background and in particular, your background in franchising.
Okay, great. Franchising came about, we say coincidences, but I don't believe in coincidence. You know, it's all some kind of intervention type thing. And I was traveling along and I'd opened an air conditioning business and I'd successfully run it for about 7 or 8 years. And so I got into looking at systems and processes and how to duplicate things, you know, because you want to, you know, want repetition, you know, over and over. So I started, you know, getting into probably most of your listeners have read, or if they haven't read it, I'd suggest E-Myth Revisited.
Love that book. He was on the, I had him on the show. Michael Gerber was on a early episode of this podcast, but it's a wonderful book.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he studied McDonald's, you know, for the reason why. And Ray Kroc built a, you know, he didn't build a franchise to sell hamburgers. He built a franchise for people to stand in line to buy. And that's, you know, a different franchising model, totally. But so I started doing these things, and I was wooed into a company called Uniglobe Travel. And so I'd already developed some of my systems and stuff, and Uniglobe Travel had failed in the Florida region. And so they were bringing in new people, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And so I came in, and that's how I got involved. And then when I first got involved, it was in franchise sales, and I became a franchise salesperson and then a franchise director for Florida. And then going through life, I got an opportunity to train. And so at the region, so I did. And there was a little baby monitor on me. I didn't even know it. And the president, the regional president and the COO were listening to me. So anyway, long story short, it was this guy in Miami that heard about it, and he wooed me down to Miami, and I got to be one of the five founders of X International, which was at the time a at-home travel agency where you could actually sit at home and book travel using CompuServe as a tie. You're tethered to the wall through your computer, and you would call down to our mainframe down in Miami, and you could go through our computers and go right into the reservation center systems for Delta or Continental, any of those, just like a regular travel agent, and book travel from home.
That's really cool.
Yep, it was great. We had it all worked out, and then the internet came along. And took
the darn internet, right? I tell you what.
Yeah, darn internet come along and just took our little idea. So we the chairman was a very visionary. He was way ahead of his time, and he saw that this before. He saw the internet taking us out. He says, "Man, we got to accelerate." Josh, we did this in 2.5 years. We went from a startup at a kitchen table in a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo down in Miami to 2.5 years later, we went public. We released our IPO and in October of 96. And
how?
Yep. In 2.5 years. And we bailed, you know, we jumped out at with, we had $5 million invested and we sold for $13 million. Well, you know, I'm giving you round figures, but you know, that's basically it.
How'd you do that? I mean, I, you know, there are business owners and businesses that are well-developed that come into franchising, and still to be able to grow that fast, especially when you had those difficulties, as you alluded to, I mean, how were you able to do that?
We hired a sales and marketing team. We trained them our way, but we hired these two guys and we put on seminars. So what we did was we went, like in this particular case, the travel industry, and it would work in any industry, but we would go after the travel agents inside the offices, and we produce a seminar for them. And then we would show them through the seminar how they could, sitting at home, make more money than sitting in an office. And we had all the slides, and we had all the, we had all the statistics, we had it all. So we could show them that by sitting at home, taking that book of business. So we did the research. Most of the time when an agent leaves the building, that agent will take the travel business with them because they have built the rapport. So we used that as a leverage so that we could say, okay, you have a bulk of business. And if you have $1.2 million or $1.3 million business that you're handling on for the company, that business can be transferred to you and you can make like $36,000. Well, they weren't making that, you know, working.
So it became a little bit of an easy sell at that point.
It was. And that's all you got to do is just figure out how to attract the masses and keep your integrity and keep your, because they still had to be able to pass franchising. And then another thing we did, and probably your franchisees, you've shared this with them, but if not, we ask every one of our potential franchisees to take a profile. Back then, we used a company called Omnia Profiling, and so we could use that profile to see if they were going to be matched for our franchise.
And was that a proprietary match? I mean, or was that just you knew the characteristics you were looking for, and if they matched up with those characteristics, you generally knew, okay, this person's likely to be a better fit.
Exactly. Like Dennis was one of our top agents, so we just did his profile, and then anybody that matched came close to his profile, we knew, that was who we were looking for. That was our target market. One of the things that I learned in franchising or in any marketing is when we shift from mass marketing to direct marketing, we can excel our company much faster.
Well, and so that was in 1996, right? So you go two plus years and the travel company goes public. Are you out of it at that point?
Oh yeah. John came to me and he said, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I think, you know, I really like one. He said, Terry, I can tell you right now, this thing's going to go to hell in a handbasket. So, you do what you want. He says, but you know, and so he and I were very close. And so I said, okay. So I sold my shares, jumped out, and it wasn't, but a year or so later, it turned into a MLM and it was a whole different concept, but I just got my chips and I moved to Boca Raton, Florida and settled in there and then got involved with another franchise group called Radio Shack.
I've heard of them. I think people have heard of them. So tell me, what was your involvement with them?
I was brought in to do turnaround stores for them.
Meaning what? You're going to go into a failing store and you have a certain period of time to go in and figure out what they're doing wrong and try to right the ship.
Exactly. And so I said, I want you to give me the worst store that you have, you know. So they said, okay. So they looked it up. Turned out it was Margate, Florida. Now, most people won't even know where Margate, Florida is, but it's in this down around Fort Lauderdale. And it's two cities beside it is Coconut Creek and Terramar. Okay. Now, Josh, the average age in this these three communities is, guess what? 77 years old.
I was going to guess something high, but wow, yeah. Okay.
So they dropped an electronics store right in the middle, and, you know, of course, it wasn't working. So I went in there. And through customer service and understanding the parameters, like one of the things was the manager of the store, second day I was on store there, and little buses come up from these retired people, you know, come on, they start walking down, and he makes a disparaging comment about them. And I said, what? And I said, I can fix this store right now. And he goes, why? And I said, this may be their only outing. Let's make it nice for them. Let's go get them some bagels and cream cheese and a little coffee. We know they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So let's just have a little coffee for them, a little bagel, a little schmear, and, you know, make it warm and pleasant for them. Well, we got to be a hangout spot, so to speak. I mean, these people would come and we would take their whatever they bought, phones or answer machines. The crew, the associates would stop by on their way home and hook it up and help them with it. And we turned that store around. I guess it was about 6 months. We took it and we made profitable in about 6 months. And then the next store they sent me to was one in Tampa, and when I got there on March the 24th, the Christmas decorations were still up. Nothing was set to planogram. The store was nowhere near where it should be. It was in bad shape. And so I even took I went and got one of those disposable cameras at Josh, you know. So I took pictures because I wanted to protect myself, you know, because the big guys don't ever see this. So anyway, so we went to work immediately. I was on order hold. I couldn't order anything because the store was a loss, and you had to be on inventory control if that happened. So I wasn't allowed to order anything. They just shipped me stuff. So I had to call around, and I'd get other stores to ship me merchandise, and then I'd get one piece of merchandise from one store and the exact piece coming from another store, and then I'd get two in the market. I'd sell one. That would be an automatic shipment if I sold it. So that's how I built the inventory back up and set it up to planogram. And we had it profitable 120 days. And what I didn't know was that I had 180 to get it done.
Wow.
They were going to, the lease of the store ran out in 180 days and 120, we had it turned back around. And they kept that store open until their demise.
Obviously, you were able to go in with a couple of different areas. I mean, what do you think that you were able to see that others were not?
The biggest thing in franchising is I don't think people really understand the power of a franchise. So, you know, most people say, well, you build one too close to me, I get all excited. I don't want a franchise more than a half a mile or a mile away from me. If I'm building a franchise, I would like to make sure that they're all kind of pocketed together, because the strength, that's where you get your strength. Like with Radio Shack one day, we have to understand marketing. Marketing obviously is the biggest thing. Most people get involved in franchising, they think because they pay the royalty fees and for the marketing support and everything. But that's not good enough. We need to get out into the marketplace. So one of the things we did with Radio Shack was we started capturing your addresses. Do you remember that when you went in a store, we'd ask you for your name and address? Okay. Yeah. Well, there was a purpose behind that. And the reason for it, the manager who collected had the best percentage rate got the most flyers in his area. So they would say if there's 100,000 flyers going out in a particular area, the ones who had the best zip code capture rate was who got the most of the allotments. We knew that if somebody walked into a store, they were going to spend about $6 or $8. But if they walked in with one of the flyers, they were going to spend around $30. So we trained our staff to capture names and addresses so that we could target market better. And again, that's the secret is at least from what I've been trained, is segment your market and then focus on it. when I was in real estate, I was with Century 21, and we took our agents and we divided them up into little pockets, and we gave them farms. And farming has been a big thing in real estate for a long time. So we just adapted the slogan nationally but neighborly. So we went around and we got to know each pocket of homes. And what we figured was that farm area was good for about 200 to 250 homes. And those homes were going to change addresses every 5 years, according to the telephone company. So we knew that all we had to do is be on one in five deals. And if we were in the neighborhood, we would have a 20% closing rate. And a 20% closing rate at that time meant you could make about $45,000, $50,000, which is great money in real estate when the average person only sells 4 houses a year.
Yeah, no, that's great.
So it's like another thing with real estate franchising or real estate, period, is the people who have listings are the ones that make money. So that's the toughest market to get because you got more rejection. So if I'm talking to your listeners here today, I'll give you four things right now that I can promise you that any listener puts these four things in place, it'll work for them each and every time. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. First is commitment. You have to be all in. That means you have to burn the boats. That means you have to be committed to making that area yours. If you focus 5 miles in a 5 mile radius, that area, you're committed to be the brand name in that 5 mile radius. Most people aren't going to drift more than 5 miles to do something. Gets out that far, they're probably going to find something else. So just be committed to be the best in your industry, and bar none. Then second is put disciplines in place that make sure that your commitment comes through. So get involved with the community, get involved with other parts of the, networking, getting Kiwanis, Easter Seals, Make a Wish, whatever it is, get involved with your community. And then the decisions you make, which is number three, decisions must be totally driven towards your goals. I give every one of your listeners permission to procrastinate on anything that's not taking them to their goal.
Okay.
And then fourth, we have to visualize. Everything we do started with a thought. We then take the thought and we need to put it onto paper, which we do. So everything, you look around you, wherever your people or your listeners are looking, everything was started in the brain. So let's visualize it. We're visual people. We think in pictures. The more pictures, that means that you paint them or you take pictures of them, put them in front of you, and keep them fine. You put those four things in place, you'll never fail at anything that you want to do, whether it's managing your time or running the best franchise or become the best franchisor.
Well, I think those are really, really good. I mean, so is that what you do in working with people now? I mean, obviously, you come to the table with a lot of experience, a lot of real hands-on experience, but you've been in the trenches, you've done these things with different franchise systems, you've grown franchises, you've worked with entrepreneurs. I mean, is that what you do now? Talk about your business and what you do now in terms of what all the things, all the experiences that you've had over your career.
I have condensed it down to a 12-week program. Very simple. Spend 12 weeks with me, and what you get is a model that you can duplicate. It includes a development plan, how you want your business to look like when it's finished. An action plan that puts the steps in place that will cause your business to be successful. It comes with an organizational strategy. Remember how to hire people. And you don't need to be the CEO of the company if that's not your best trait. Hire people to come in and do just like the guys did in Miami. They brought in 5 people that could make this happen. So that, and then you have marketing systems, inbound and outbound marketing that goes into this. But I add some other things into it as well, which is neuro-linguistics programming. Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard of it, but explain it.
It's a language that was first started in 1973 by Richard Bandler, and it's around that we speak, our body speaks 55% of our language, and 38% is tone, 7% is words. So it's things like being able to mirror and match your opponent. Now, you're a lawyer, and I'm sure you did some, law work, so to speak. Well, profiling and understanding your person on the other side of the table is very important to you, isn't it?
It's utmost importance. Yeah, it's really important.
Yes. So you would never go into a deal where you didn't know your opponent, you'd have all these things. Well, people's behaviors, we can learn people's behaviors. So if we learn their behaviors, then when we get involved in a conversation with somebody in a networking, we can almost adapt right to them through mirror and matching, leading and pacing, building rapport. Everything in this world today is about building rapport with people. Salespeople have to learn how to do have to be more of a consultant today in today's marketplace, because people don't trust salespeople.
I feel like everything that you've said throughout this interview is consistent with the idea that you really, number one, get to learn what the customer is looking for, right? I mean, what's the experience that they need? What's the number one best thing about the product or service that you're offering in terms of how it relates to your customers, and gear everything towards that? And then obviously the devils are in the details, but thinking from the perspective of the other. So like, it reminds me of a great book, and I love this book, and I love the author, Bob Berg, wrote a book called The Go-Giver. Have you read that?
Oh, I have. In fact, Bob, I just helped Bob get on a podcast.
Bob's great.
Has he been on your...
Yeah, he's been on a couple times with a couple different books. I really loved, you know, the parables that he puts together. But the idea is that you're doing things with other people's interests in mind, not your own. And as a direct result, your business will improve. In other words, but doing it from the customer's lens, not your own lens.
In fact, I teach in part of the program is that my organizational chart, Josh, is upside down. So the customer is the boss, and the way I envision your helping you grow your business would be putting the customer at the top of your, at the top of the organizational chart, and then the people that are on the front lines, the people that actually do the talking and communicating with them. This is something we implemented in Radio Shack. When we got there, the managers were not. They're very restricted to what they could do. And so that meant that if they got anything involved with a complaint or something, the regional manager had to get involved, you know, kind of protect the image. And so we changed that. So we got because the managers were interacting with the customers and the associates were interacting with customers, we empowered them to make decisions. Like for an example, they could give back a customer refund without a receipt for up to $50. No questions asked.
That's great.
So we thought if by taking that guy out of the middle, taking the regional guy out of the middle, look at the money we were saving. We would fight sometimes over $8, you know, and we spend $150 to keep that $8. And sometimes it wasn't worth it. I got a little funny story here I could share with your audience.
Sure.
This is at Radio Shack Days. And this little guy is right after Christmas. And this little guy, about 5 or 6, comes into the store. Got one of those little motorized cars and it isn't working. And so I put it up on the counter and I'm testing it and flipping batteries and things. And I go, look, buddy, it just doesn't work, you know? And I was just being a little, you know, talking a little, you know, down to pay, you know, his level, so to speak. And he looked up at me and he said, well, it worked great till it went in the pool. And so I looked at the mom and I looked back at him and I said, wow. And your mom goes, no, it didn't. And he looked right at his mom and he goes, yes, it did, mom. And so I said, well, buddy, I said, I may have one of these in the back room. Let me go see. And so I walked back. Of course, I already knew that. Brought it back out. Got it all fixed up for him. Show it worked and everything. And I said, this is for you being a good young man telling the truth. This will always get you places, you know. And I wasn't being mean to the lady. I was just explaining, you know, that being truthful is the best way to handle things. But they always, you know, try to run a game on you or whatever. But yeah, when your frontline people, they need to be able to make decisions. So it doesn't, the middle management people should be working on the business, creating systems and processes and things that will add value to the frontline people. So the more decisions the frontline people can make, the more satisfied the customer is, because no customer likes to wait for an answer. So you probably remember in Radio Shack days, we had a slogan that says, you've got questions, we've got answers. Mm-hmm. And we truly meant that. So we wanted to live up to that slogan.
Well, I think, you know, it's. I feel like I could talk to you for about an hour or so. Tell me about, you know, if you to leave with the audience today, you know, what are some things you would like to leave with them? Obviously, you have such a, you know, you're unique as an interviewee here because you've got such a variety of experience. I think you've got an offer you want to leave for the listeners. But, You know, one of the things that I get asked the most that I think would be beneficial is, you know, if you had one piece of advice for somebody who is looking to not only buy a franchise, but separately turn a business into a franchise, what would each of those be? Because you've kind of seen it on both sides.
And I encourage anybody to first, whatever business they have, if it can be duplicatable, if we can create another one, step out of the way and remove yourself the ego. Most business owners, they let ego get in their way. And that means that, you know, they want to be the CEO, they want to be the president. It's not necessary. Hire the right people to do the right jobs for you. Like you and I discussed before we got on the call, we hired the number one franchise attorney to make sure that we had the best franchise agreement. So when you're building something, if you don't have money, then go get a bridge loan or go get funding for it. If you got a great idea, take advantage of it. Seek good counsel. And I'm not just with a lawyer, but, you know, test market. We did mystery shopping with Radio Shack. Mystery shop areas. I had a client bring a individual to me and they said, well, we got these, we want to put a bike shop and a coffee house between these two apartment buildings. And I said, well, that sounds like a great idea. How many apartments in the building? And they said 32 on each side. And I said, okay, that sounds pretty good. That's 64 units. And I said, how many houses are around there or dwellings around there? Oh, it's in an industrial area. They're just getting started. I said, well, bad business idea. If you're the only place, you got 64 units, how are you going to, you can't fix a bike every 5 minutes,
exactly.
The same bike. So you have to study your marketplace. Where are you going to plop your business down? You know, you see these road counters and things in the streets. It's to determine, like for an example, McDonald's. Do you know where they want to put their restaurants?
Where's that?
They want to put them close to areas where there's children. Very seldom do you see a McDonald's on a main street if there's not kids involved, because McDonald's is not in the hamburger business at all. They're in the kids business. And the franchise owners know that. And then the franchisors, the people that are the selling the franchise, they're not in the hamburger business either. They're in the real estate business.
That's right.
So look past. I mean, you know, in fact, my offer is going to be very simple if I can share it with
sure.
you. I want to help any of your listeners by you spend an hour with me. Give me a call, sign up, go to my website. I'll give you my personal website, terryogren.com, and you can go there and hit the contact button. It'll drop down, put your name and your email address and a subject matter you want to talk to me about and a little message in there. Send it off to me. We'll set up an hour coaching session for free, and I'll coach your team, as many people that want to be on it, because I think that it's going to be the small businessman that turns this country around. We got the best opportunity right now to make money. And I don't care which side of the aisle, and that doesn't matter. What matters is that we've got a great opportunities. I was with one of my companies. I don't know if you've heard of them, but MarineMax, and they're a large boat company.
I have heard of them.
Yeah. Well, I work with three of their stores and turning them around, getting them focused and going in the direction. And I was on a call with one of their salespeople the other day, and he says, well, you know, the word here is that we're in a recession. And I said, what?
Yeah, I don't think so.
And they go, yeah, you know, nobody's buying boats. I said, no, there's too many other things to buy right now. So boats not on their list.
That's right.
I said, no, you look at consumer markets right now. This weekend, if I understand the numbers, I was listening to it out of my other ear, so to speak. My understanding is this weekend, there was more money spent this weekend than was on Black Friday. Now, granted, Black Friday is only one day, but we just spent the same more money than over this past weekend. And here we are. So we have a great opportunity. If your thing can be duplicated, then you've got an idea of a great franchise. Then all you need to do is have somebody like myself or other people like you that are involved in the business that can help you make sure that you're putting the right steps in place. You may need funding. I wrote a business plan a few months back for an immigrant coming into our country on an EB-5 visa. It had been written by two other firms before me. They called me, and I got 45 days, Josh, to get this document ready and for the Homeland Security. I drove to the location where the guy wanted to put this business. I don't know if you know much about it, but you have to invest $500,000 into a failing business and employ 10 people in 2 years, and they can't be family.
Okay.
So that's the criteria. So whoever did it first, they went online and they started looking at line, how to, you know, the demographics and stuff. And of course, the Google search didn't support the document. So I drove down there and I found out there was a hospital being built, a factory being built, 8 subdivisions being built that wasn't on Google's radar. So put that information in, put it together, and we got him through. He passed his thing. He got his visa. So it's, again, it's sometimes you have to do some hard things like research and, you know, don't let, you know, if somebody says no to you, then make them say it to you about 10 times. You know, Thomas Edison said one time that, you know, it took you 10,000 times to make the light bulb. He says, nope, it just took me 10,000 times to figure out how to do it.
That's right. Well, for those listening, go to terryogborn.com. That's Terry, TerryOgburn.com, TerryOgburn.com, to find out more about the offer and to learn more about Terry and all of his experiences and how he might be able to help you with your business. Thank you so much, Terry, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you for having me on your show. And if there's anything I can do for you as well, please reach out to me.
I definitely will. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Franchise Euphoria. If you enjoyed this episode or have enjoyed the podcast in general, I would really appreciate it if you could go to iTunes and leave me a rating and review. It really helps to get this podcast out to more and more people. So the easy way to do it is go to iTunes and in the search box, put in Franchise Euphoria. You will then see my cover art and you click on my smiling face that says Franchise Euphoria and then click on the link that says ratings and reviews. It's that simple, but boy, oh boy, does it mean the world to me when people leave ratings and reviews. And like I said, it really helps get the show out there. Once again, would love it if you would go to iTunes and leave a rating and review if you enjoyed this episode or other episodes of the show. And until the next time, happy franchising.